So in this session, we've got Sharanjit Padam to talk about the Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse. He's been following this very closely, and I don't think he needs much in way of introduction. He's done three sessions already today, so he's the man himself.
Hi. This is my third in a row, so I may go blank at a certain point. Just bear with me and be gentle with your questions. It'd be great. Thank you. All right, what am I talking about now? Okay. Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse, and particularly the implications for insurers. It'd be pretty hard to have missed the events that have been going on with the Royal Commission. I just want to give you a warning as well. Some of the subject matter is not very pleasant at all. In fact, it's been hard to research a lot of this. So there are some national helplines there if anyone is triggered or would like to get some support around any of these issues. Like I said, I'm talking about implications for insurers. I'm talking briefly on some valuation methods. I'm not going to go into detailed formulas and all the rest of it. I'm just talking about principles and ideas. And also some initial discussion about some of the scenarios that we might want to consider or insurers might want to consider around this. There's some excellent work that's already been done on this issue. I'd highly recommend coming to Betty's session with herself and Andrew tomorrow, looking at latency of child sexual abuse claims. There's also a work done by Greg Moran back in 2005, and that's a paper that I refer to extensively and talks a lot about some of these issues. There's a poster somewhere. I haven't seen where they are yet, but there is a poster done by David Minty and Jonathan Hua, also on the same topic of the Royal Commission. And Jeff Atkins wrote an excellent article on this topic in the October Actuaries magazine, which I know you all have read and memorized, so we'll move on from there. Royal Commission. Very broadly, the objectives of the Royal Commission has been to improve institutional responses to child sexual abuse, both in terms of the future, in terms of looking at where changes can be made, both legally and organisationally, and in terms of guidelines to improve or to reduce the incidence of abuse of children, but also looking at what's happened in the past. There's an opportunity as well the Royal Commission provides to victims to come forward and to tell their story, and also an investigation into can things be improved for victims in the past. The Commission has already reported. It gave an interim report on the 30th of June 2014. I highly recommend reading it. It's an excellent report. And sets out the full broad of how far the Commission has got. Now, the Commission is going to produce its final report at the end of 2017, whereafter the recommendations would go up to governments, both state and federal, and we'll have to see what the governments do after that. But one of the key pressing issues regarding the Royal Commission is the setting up of a redress scheme for victims. They are going to actually release early consultation about that starting early 2015 and start that process going earlier than the rest of their reporting. The scope of the Commission has been about child sexual abuse. There's lots of ways to abuse children, and the Commission is only looking at sexual abuse. It's looking at the context of institutions as well, residential homes, scouts, sports clubs, churches, all institutions. So they're not looking at abuse that's taken place outside of institutions. The Commission is not seeking to raise criminal prosecutions, although they will provide information to the police where they can help. And the Commission itself has no power to pay compensation. Now, looking at the implications for insurers, we have to understand there's actually a long chain of factors that you have to think about here. There's the Royal Commission itself and the decisions it makes, which are by no means certain at this point in time. What impact that has on victims and their advisers, again, we don't know what impact that's going to have at this point in time. and what the responses of institutions and governments will be. Then we get to the point where we think about, well, what the impact on insurers might be, and finally what the impact on reinsurers might be. So there's a whole sequence, a long chain of uncertainty and impact. So that's part of the reason why it's very difficult to be, you know, certain about what's going to happen to insurers. So just to go through some of the implications of what the insurers, the Commission is going to investigate widely. Now, there's been a lot of, there've actually been about 100 or so investigations into similar type issues over the last 100 years. So this is, the Royal Commission is not the first to look at this issue, but it's by far the most comprehensive review of child sexual abuse in institutions. The Royal Commission has taken its remit very seriously and are investigating quite, not only widely, but they're improving understanding. There's a lot of research element. I remember when I first looked at this back in 2005, there was very little reliable information or any information really about the prevalence of abuse, and most of it was conjectured rather than being real. But in just in the space of the year or so that the Royal Commission has been operating, there's a lot more information available. There's a lot of research gone into this. The main impact, which will be no surprise to anyone here, I think, is going to be an increase in reporting. In the same way, the Royal Commission has raised the publicity of the issue. They've brought the issue to the forefront, and I think this will increase the number of claims that will be reported to, particularly to institutions. There's a change in mindset or willingness for people to report this. And you only have to see some of the protesters outside the Royal Commission who are all carrying placards saying, tell your story to the Royal, to the Royal Commission. There may be increases claims against institutions because the Royal Commission may decide to recommend changes to legislation, things like changes in duty of care. Most likely these will be prospective, but then you have to think about the possibility of retrospective changes, particularly limitation periods, although it is actually questionable to the extent that limitation periods have had an impact in the past, and potentially reopen some claims that have already been settled, because there may be another opportunity for victims to come forward with this. So, potential for the increase in claims against institutions, insurers, and their reinsurers. Now, like I said, this is at the end of a long chain. There are a number of barriers. If you look at the claims paid out by insurers, if you can ever get that information, it's not a huge amount that has been paid in the past. And there's a number of good reasons for this. I mean, there's been a lot of policy exclusions. Sexual misconduct is generally a policy exclusion these days, and there's occasionally you can buy riders to allow for that. Sometimes finding the relevant policy, if you are something like a sports club, a volunteer sports club that's been going for many years, who knows what the records are for who your insurer was, and you know, if that insurer is still around. We've had a lot of changes in insurers. There's a big difference between the cover that's bought by an institution to protect the institution as opposed to the offender, and you know, if anybody's been insured, it's been the institution. So an individual offender's actions may not necessarily be covered by those policies. We've got aggregation of serial offences, and where you've got those kinds of issues that may reduce the cover available to insureds and thereby reduce the liability for insurers. And generally speaking, where the evidence seems to be that where policies were offered that did cover sexual misconduct, there were very low policy limits in place for that. So insurers do have some exposure, but it's a case of the quantum is not necessarily large, but it's the number of claims that I think will be the big issue for insurers. The sources of exposure, how many policies they've written across what area, as opposed to large individual claims. Let's have a look. The other impact I think the Royal Commission will have is the increasing likelihood of class actions. And I think this is because you're bringing together victims. There's a couple of cases whereby a priest has been prosecuted in Australia, and there's been not enough evidence. And the same priest has been prosecuted in the UK, and there's not been enough evidence. But because those two victims didn't know about each other, they've then found out about each other, and one of them has been able to establish that there's been a history of this priest offending, and therefore the church should have known about it. And those two, and then that case was settled, and the second victim got compensation. So with that idea, with the Royal Commission, it's bringing together lots of victims and establishing a history of abuse by particular offenders in particular institutions, which is more likely to lead to things like class actions, where you can get together all the victims of a single offender or of an institution. Litigation funders are also far more active now than they have been in the past, and I understand there's already litigation funders who are looking to bring claims. The awards or the claims costs have generally been low historically. What I've got up there is, let's see if I can make this work. There we go. So that's... I'll talk about Australia. Most cases in Australia have been settled out of court, particularly those involving insurers. So it's actually very hard to get any data. Greg Moran's paper does talk about a case that did go to court. On the other part of this, we also have to think about the redress scheme if the committee comes up with a redress scheme. And one of the models for the commission that might consider was the Irish case, where the Irish scheme also set up a redress scheme. And you can look, there was a variance in the types of awards. On average, the award was €62,000, but it did go up to €300,000. That's the distribution of the awards there. Sorry about the legibility. This one here is, the big one is €50,000 to €100,000euros. May or may not be a model for what the Royal Commission comes up for a redress scheme. Access to justice is a big issue for the Royal Commission. They've raised the question of whether victims have had enough access to justice in the past, whether civil litigation has been an effective route, and whether things like limitation periods, vicarious liability, and limitation periods have stopped access to justice. They're looking at issues like changing limitation periods, changing vicarious liability rules, perhaps making it compulsory for any institution that has children involved to have insurance going forward. The redress scheme is a big part of this access to justice. The commission is still debating with and discussing options here, including the scope. Is it just for the past claims, or does it include future incidences? What level of benefits will be provided, and including both care and support and any redress payments? The standard of proof, the funding arrangements, the operation of these schemes, who exactly will operate any redress scheme? Will it be the institutions? Will it be states? Will it be federally run? And this is a very key question here about civil litigation. Will civil litigation be stopped if you take a redress payment from the redress scheme? Or would it carry on? And one of the key questions for insurers is, could the redress scheme payments be used to fund civil litigation? Because at the moment, the awards are so low that there's not much incentive for lawyers to take up cases. Victims have found it difficult to fund their cases. If the redress scheme pays them enough money to at least start or pay some of their legal expenses, they could then use that money to fund a civil litigation, which would lead to claims for insurers. And I think that's the nightmare scenario, I guess, for the insurers. And also, it could changes to civil litigation increase claims as well. So a redress scheme, my point here is that a redress scheme is not necessarily a way for insurers to get away from their liability. It could, in fact, increase their liabilities. On the other hand, if people settle through the redress scheme and therefore unlikely to take civil litigation, then it could be good news for insurers in terms of how much they pay out. A redress scheme is increasing the certainty largely for insurers. So what do we do all about all of this as actuaries? Particularly in terms of valuation. Jeff Atkins talks a lot about this in his article, and really I would refer you to that. What I would say is you have to look at the purpose of your valuation. Accounting standards differ. You have to think about whether it's a provision or a contingent liability. For many people affected, many institutions, it will be a contingent liability. For insurers, obviously, a provision. What does APRA require that you do? How are you going to read GPS 320 in terms of allowing for this? I think you might consider lots of scenarios in your FCR that you may not consider in your ILVR. Other internal scenario testing that you might wish to engage in. The big issue is that because the question of the redress scheme and the access to justice issue for the Royal Commission has not been settled, but is likely to be settled within the next couple of years, you've got this period of artificial uncertainty. You're waiting for a decision. Once that period happens, you have a lot more certainty. So say, here's a classic example where, hypothetical example, if you take into account the full range of the decisions that can be made by the Royal Commission, that, a particular insurer might be considered to be insolvent. But the Royal Commission decides something in 2 years' time, that a redress scheme goes ahead and there's no access to civil litigation, and suddenly this insurer is back to being solvent. And that's a perverse outcome, and one that I think, it's impractical for us to go through that whole basis. So I think we need to be quite practical about how we look at this issue. Valuation problems, lots of valuation problems. Historical claims, lack of, particularly for people who are not insuring the church but may have liability through other organisations like sports clubs. Exposure data will be difficult. Particularly for exposure data, because some of the key information you'll need as well is how many children were there, how many potential adult offenders were there involved in the organisation. Now, that's not normally data that you might capture if you did capture exposure data when you were writing these policies. Setting your assumptions for how your valuation is very difficult, and we'll go through some of that in a second. I'm not sure how am I doing for time, Betty? Okay, that's good. I think I'm on time. There's been changes in how those assumptions have changed over time. Reporting rates. Fundamentally, that people do not report sexual abuse. The research shows strongly that there's a massive under-reporting problem. And what we are dealing with here is literally an unreported problem. And that causes all sorts of difficulties in terms of analysis. Average cost per claim, as I said, I think that's less of an issue because we're not talking about millions in terms of rewards, but potentially we are. And the redress scheme, who knows what's going to happen with that. All right. More pictures now, less words. I think when you're talking about valuation, you probably fall into one of three categories. I think there's company, perhaps, insurers that have insured organizations like the church that have a large exposure, that have access to a lot of historical information and have a detailed exposure information. So those are people who knew what they were getting into when they wrote this stuff. And I think for them, valuation is from my discussions, is pretty straightforward. They know what they're doing. They've done that. And that's not so much an issue. There, at the opposite end, we have people with very small exposure. So obviously no historical claims and limited exposure information. But I think there's good reason why they've not had any claims. It's because they have small exposure. So from a materiality point of view, you do something practical in terms of the valuation here. You wouldn't get too involved. I think the problem is actually the ones with the medium exposure. So the ones that did write a large book of sports insurance or a large book of residential homes, or for them, they may have limited claims and they may have some exposure information, but that second tier, I think, is where a lot of the uncertainty is going to come, because the liability could be material. We don't know yet. In terms of valuation, like I said, I think there's two main approaches. One is looking at reporting rates, and the other one is looking at an exposure-based approach. Exposure-based, again, it's a long chain of things to think about together. You have to think about how many victims you've had. You have to think about how many of those victims will actually report. And then you'd have to think about what the insurance coverage is. You know, is there limitations to the insurance coverage? And lastly, you have to think about the average award. Understanding the victims, and you could go into detailed modeling in terms of around how many victims you have based on incidence rates, or you could just summarize everything and look at reporting rates. So there is an option here in terms of the level of detail you need to go into your modeling, and obviously I'd suggest that you look at the materiality and do something practical. So the critical assumptions that you have in your valuation is going to be the prevalence rate if you're doing an exposure-based approach. Otherwise, it's a reporting rate. And if you're looking at a reporting rate, it's overall latency that's important. And then, you know, figure out numbers of claims and average size, and there you go. Now, in terms of setting these assumptions, there's some useful information out there. The interim report of the Royal Commission has a lot of statistics in there that can be used when you're thinking about exposure. Moran et al. Also does a lot of work. One of the figures that they come up with is a 2% prevalence rate, and it's interesting to see how they derive that. You also have to think about risk factors because the incidence of abuse varies depending on the type of institution, residential versus non-residential, a mix of professional versus volunteer staff, mix of gender in adults and children. We know that the rate of abuse suffered by women, by girls, is worse than boys. We know that men are more likely to be offenders rather than women, so obviously those have an impact when you think about this. And again, the extent to which you take this into account depends on the materiality and the level at which you're doing your modelling. The other thing is there's strong evidence to suggest that prevalence rates have reduced over time as attitudes towards this and risk management and safety for children has increased. There is evidence that suggests that prevalence rates have reduced. But how much do you allow for? I don't know. We've also seen that trends over time in increasing willingness for people to come forward and report. And also is a question of, you know, will there be increasing awards for this over time? Lastly, scenarios. I think, you know, again, going back to your purpose, internal versus external, I think you would be wise to look at scenarios. The key scenarios to think about is what would happen with the redress scheme. So I've talked about a scenario where a redress scheme comes in and removes a lot of your liability. Also, there's a potential for a redress scheme to come in and increase your liability. And I think those are the two key scenarios to look at. New claim sources triggered. I think that's going to be a key one for those medium exposed insurers who haven't written churches but have written sports clubs, volunteer organisations. That where there haven't been claims but because of the actions of the Royal Commission, claims start coming through. It's interesting to note the Royal Commission has identified 1,000 institutions where sexual abuse of children could occur. So this is widespread. There are a lot of institutions that might be affected. Speeding up in reporting, I don't think you want to project those trends going forward all the time. There will be a number of reports and it will stop. And then lastly, a class action with litigation funding is another scenario to consider. And I know that Susie Amos is talking about that, and it'll be quite interesting to see, to find out about litigation funding as well. All right, that's what I had prepared, but I'm hoping we have a good discussion. I see Estelle, who's been strongly involved in this, may have some answers as well, where I can't come up with some. Maybe not. We'll see.
If you have questions, please step up to the microphone. Maybe I'll kick off a question. So going forward, Sharanjit, what changes do you expect insurers to make when they're writing policies for organisations that deal with children, given the history of what we've seen and sort of the systemic issues that the Royal Commission has addressed? Oh, do you need a microphone?
I think it's interesting because the Royal Commission is certainly, in terms of the changes it's making, it seems quite keen to make sure that there is an insurance market for this. Because, If insurance is required, but the terms under which you do it make it impossible for volunteer organisations to operate. Children involved in a lot of activities. You know, if your local soccer club has to have this cover, and the way that the liability is made makes it uninsurable, then all these organisations will go under. And I think the Royal Commission is very keen to make sure that that's not an outcome. There are lots of opportunities here for insurers who haven't ridden this business to become involved. In terms of risk management, if the Royal Commission comes up with better guidelines for managing the risk, I think there's an opportunity for insurers to become involved with the risk management and also potentially taking on some of the risk.
Oh, can you speak into the microphone? Thank you.
I just have a question. Do you think that if institutions, they buy like insurance policies to cover this, their care factor will further reduce if it's not there already? Because I think at the heart of the matter, the institutions need to care. It's not just about liability and money.
Are you talking about prospective underwriting?
No, I'm talking about the church, they have insurance to cover any liabilities occurring from any, abuse. Do you think their care factor in terms of actually dealing with the victims, because they can just pay for the claims because they have insurance, will reduce?
Yeah, so it's a sort of moral hazard issue you're talking
about.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think... coming out of the Royal Commission so far, the churches have engaged very strongly with the Royal Commission and have indicated that they want this issue to be dealt with. They certainly care about the issues. A lot of the submissions that I've read from many churches, for example, the Uniting Church submission comes to mind. The institutions are very... they want to help out. It's not like they don't care. And I think the particularly the Catholic Church as well has changed its view and recommend and sort of regrets the approach it's taken in the past to sort of strongly defend claims. So I agree potentially some institutions could take that attitude, but so far from what I've seen and what I've read, the churches are taking very seriously and coming from a very care-based place. I think the other thing to say is that... the insurance is limited. Even the Catholic Church's own insurance would have been limited in some way. Insurers would have, as part of the usual underwriting guidelines, not taken the whole cost of everything. And there will be a limit to how much coverage people have.
Thanks.
John Duravin, Swiss Re. Sharanjit, in describing the amount of uncertainty that you see for an insurer with a large volume of data, medium data, or little or no data, you, I think, were sort of quite confident that if you had a large volume of data, then you were kind of well-placed to assess your liabilities. I'm just wondering, I mean, obviously there are a number of future scenarios in terms of what might emerge from the Royal Commission. Do you think at this stage, given the data that's been made available by the Royal Commission, that if you do have a large volume of data, you're well placed to assess the outcome in any specified scenario in relation to, say, redress schemes and accessibility or otherwise to civil litigation? Or are there still massive uncertainties about the number of future reports?
Yeah, these are good questions. I think when I was thinking about the larger insurance and larger exposure, I was thinking very much along the lines of the church insurers. But you're right, it's not confined to them and their particular captives. Other insurers have been affected. And certainly, to phrase better what I was saying was that in terms of existing valuation methods, they're probably well established for those large insurers, right? And certainly you would want to think about changing assumptions because of the future uncertainty. However, at this point in time, I don't think there's a basis on which to do that. I think there's too much, you know, it's bimodal and go either way, and there's no indications at the moment from which way to take. And so from that point of view, you know, it's almost easy because you don't change anything. You just do what you did before. I do think, I think answered your question. Thanks, John.
I thought I might just make a couple of comments, John, about and Sharanjit, about the uncertainty. And I agree totally with Sharanjit's comments on that. And even the changes that we're already seeing will impact the level of reporting. So the Victorian government, for example, have announced, removing the statute of limitations. And whilst in reality the statute of limitations can be changed and there is discretion around that, I think it has put people off coming forward, and it has put lawyers off. And in some states, like WA, for example, has a much stricter statute of limitations. I think the other thing that New South Wales government announced was access to records. So access to records and better access to records would make a huge difference in terms of people being able to prove their case and would, again, potentially lead to people coming forward. And just the Royal Commission being in existence and people coming forward, I think that will result in... You just have to imagine it would result in more reporting than we've seen in the past, if nothing else changed.
And just to add to that is still, I think New South Wales government will be following Victorian government's path to remove statute of limitation for child sexual abuse claims. So we've seen that open the floodgates, and what we'll talk about tomorrow in my paper is that we have seen an increase in the number of claims coming forward as a result of the Royal Commission.
I think what would be very interesting with Betty's paper is in terms of the risk factors. They do an analysis of the various things that might lead to claims. I think that would be very interesting for people driving assumptions for this. Thank you.
Julie DeMarc from Liberty International Underwriters. I just had a question. You say that, I know Jeff says that they wouldn't change the valuation methodology at this point. Would you make an allowance in your risk margins if you had exposure to molestation?
I think you would want to, yes.
How?
Oh, look, I think scenario testing would be one of the best ways of doing this. But again, you know, even scenario testing, it's hard to see how you do this than other than say, chuck in 10%. You know, there's some statistics. Like for example, I haven't updated this, and I think it's worthwhile getting towards the update. But in the interim report of the Royal Commission said that of the people coming to talk to them up until that stage, I think it was something like 95% had already spoken about it. So only 5% was a new report, which suggests that, you know, that you're looking at a 5% IBNR. But you then have to say, well, those were the people up early on in the process. Are the later people going to come and talk? Is it going to switch around? You then have the issues that there's no compensation involved if you come and talk to the Royal Commission. If there's an actual redress scheme where you will get some money, would that improve the incentive? So like I said, you know, you're talking about those numbers. I think the information available can give you a good feel for how those assumptions might change, but I'm not willing to stand here and tell you what I think they should be if that's what you're looking for.
David Davis of ANSFAR. Just like to ask a question on the potential funding of the redress scheme. Obviously, government is going to be a big player in that. But in terms of the insurance industry, how would you like to see the emerging involvement of the insurance industry's contribution to that redress scheme, and the extent to which we engage as an industry, how would you like to see that develop?
Interesting question. I know the ICA has been paying a lot of interest to this and is one of the organisations involved with the discussions with the Royal Commission. And the Royal Commission certainly has already got individual insurers involved in those discussions. I guess I personally think there might be a moral obligation to think about, particularly if we're in a scenario where a redress scheme removes the liability for insurers or substantially reduces it. There might be a moral obligation to pay something, and I'd hope that insurers would get involved and see themselves as part of the community that they work in, and we could always do with some good publicity in this industry, I think. But they also, there is a difference, and this is one of the issues that the Royal Commission is thinking, really grappling with, which is what is the purpose of any redress payment that they make? Like, what is the nature of this payment? It's not compensation. That's certainly true. And so insurance has always been done on the basis of that kind of indemnity, that kind of compensation. So this is a different type of payment. Is it a moral payment? Is it some sort of recognition payment? And, these are difficult questions, and they've got people like lawyers involved, so great for them. I don't know, but I certainly think from an equity point of view, as an insurer, if you're better off because of this redress scheme, from an equity point of view, you might think it reasonable to contribute to it. I also wonder if the Royal Commission will play hard games and say things like, well, if we can't get a redress scheme funded, maybe we need to beef up access to civil litigation. So insurers are sort of faced with a choice of more civil litigation or funding a redress scheme. Now, I don't know the extent to which they're going to think about things like that, but if I was them, I would certainly be thinking about that.
Martin Fitzpatrick from PFS. Also on the redress scheme, and I take your point that it's not compensation, but to what extent... And perhaps the Irish, and I don't know what the Irish experience has been, but to what extent would prior payments be taken into account potentially in a redress scheme rather than just future payments?
Yes, so that's an issue as well. There have been other redress schemes, for example, the Melbourne scheme run by the Diocese of the Catholic Church there, and the extent to which people who have already received compensation can receive more compensation. I believe that's being discussed by the Royal Commission. I think that would probably, from an equity point of view, we might say, no, that's not equitable. But I think the Commission will make its decisions based on other criteria, personally. And it has been interesting because the Institute of Actuaries did have a working party where we provided a submission to the Royal Commission, and that's available online. We did look at the issues like equity in that. But I suspect it's going to be negotiated. It's going to be, a bit of this, a bit of that, until everyone's happy. Until nobody's happy. That's right, that's right. Until everybody's unhappy. Yes, that's far more realistic.
We might have time for one more question, if there is another one. No? Okay. Can you join me in thanking Sharon Jitt for his presentation?